Well, is it all over tomorrow with the election, or does it just begin? Think about that. We're going to come back in a moment with Paul Gersio and George Hart from the Merlin Project, and we'll also take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Paul Gersio with us, George Hart, to your phone calls as well. So, Paul, what other projects will Merlin work on in the future?
Well, you know, good that you asked that, George, because we were talking about this before the show, George and I, and for instance, this past weekend, the Breeders' Cup was run, most valuable horse race in the country. It's a $6 million purse for the winner. I posted using Merlin as a springboard to do this, the winning trifecta formula, and if you had played my winning trifecta formula, you would have won the trifecta.
Wow.
For the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, people say, oh, this is just a bunch of politics and nonsense. You know, no. Your executive producer, who will remain nameless, okay, had a lot of trouble selling a house.
I remember
last
that.
Last year. And after 6 months of trying to sell the house, we got contacted. And doing something which is actually a service that we offer, we gave her a date to put that house on the market. In other words, to put it in the MLS book and make it available, make it known that it was available. She had a buyer for the house the next day.
Wow.
Okay. that's. I mean, how much better is that? And in a time period where people are having trouble moving properties, and I've been doing this now for a couple of years. It's a flat fee if you want to pay a flat fee. It's a percentage of the closing fee, or nothing if we're wrong. So in other words, you want to use time tracks to pick a date to put your house on the market, and we will guarantee that it will sell within that date and a date in the future, no more than, let's say, 90 days away or thereabouts. And if it doesn't, if a buyer doesn't come forward in that period of time and that sale doesn't come together, you don't owe us. It's a freebie.
What a great plan.
I told that to my father, who was 97, when I told him. He said, "You have got to be kidding." I said, "No." I said, when the home that you grew up in Freeport, Long Island, fell into the hands of my cousins, they used time tracks to pick the date to sell the house. It was in an area that was going a little downhill, and so they put it on the market for just a shade under $400,000. They figured they were going to have to give back probably maybe as much as 20% before it was going to sell. So they figured they'd have to knock 80,000, 60 to 80,000 off that price. They sold it in 8 days for $378,000. And one of my cousins, who was actually the realtor on the deal, got to collect the realtor fee as well as the sale of the house.
That is amazing, Paul. It really is amazing. And George, with the things
I was going to ask Lisa to come on and talk about this.
No, she won't do that.
I know she wouldn't.
She's
she wouldn't
private.
Do it. But you know it's true.
Well, yes, I do. Absolutely.
And I think that's a pretty good deal for us to do that. And the flat fee to come up with the dates is much less than what a fraction of the closing would cost. But even so, if you pick the closing deal, you have to fulfill it, but it doesn't cost you anything out of pocket if we're wrong.
All right, let me ask George this. George, there's been talk that the stock market is going to burst again. Can you, through Merlin, find out if that's going to happen?
Interestingly, yes. There are a couple of different ways of looking at that. As you and Paul were just speaking, I was, in fact, glancing at a couple of companies like Apple and NVIDIA. Previously on your show, we alerted listeners to a really potential breakdown in the great growth story that Apple had been about a year after Steve Jobs' death. If you use the company incorporation dates or the first time that he and Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak got together in a garage in California, put all of those dates into time tracks, you could come up with a very accurate prediction of the history of that company and its rise, and now it's sort of years of somewhat illness. Let's just say, well, what's the point about the market as a whole? There are some few companies that really serve as a locomotive that bring the whole thing up or let it fall. And if you do time tracks runs on those specific companies, you can get a pretty good idea of what's going on right now. If listeners looked at the so-called FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, and Microsoft as an add-on, those five stocks, add them together as a simple average of their prices and plot them, you'll probably have the single most valuable chart to look at in terms of where we are and what's happening. We're testing a trend line that goes back many, many years on that. After this election, that may fail. Where Time Tracks comes in is the ability to look at those separate companies in FANG plus Microsoft and make predictions about where those companies may be going. As Paul indicated earlier, you put the whole story together and you have something very interesting to look at.
Let's take some calls here. They line up for both of you. We'll go to Mike in West Palm Beach, Florida to get started. Mike, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
For years, we've been studying the role of the CIA in the assassination of President Kennedy and other figures around the world. Former leaders of the CIA have denounced Donald Trump as a national security risk for many reasons. Question I have for your guests are, what is the CIA waiting for? When are they going to take this guy out? Are they using...
Not going to go there. Not going to go there.
Sorry. Well, you know, we were concerned about that, considering the craziness of this election. I think both George and I are a little surprised that there haven't been some near misses going on during the course of this last 18 months. The fact that it hasn't happened is fairly remarkable.
Let's go to Cliff in Bristol, Tennessee. Hey, Cliff, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
You know, you hear everybody complaining about our choices, but who put these two people in the position they're in right now? The American people.
They sure did.
And they have, they have no room to complain. I don't care for either one of them. I just, it's kind of a choice between dumb and dumber, and you can figure out which is which. I don't care for either one, and this country's
most people feel that way. They are voting for one or the other, but they don't like the choices right now. But Paul, we're stuck with these choices right now. We got to make
sure.
It work.
You know, I don't know how many people watched 60 Minutes yesterday, but Frank Lutz, who is a longtime pollster, took two groups of about 15 people each. One group was Hillary supporters and the other Trump supporters. And he was astonished to admit that when he asked them of what they thought of their own candidate or what they thought of the opposite candidate, all 30 of them said they didn't like anybody. All 30 of them. He was astonished. And when they went through the polling of those people in terms of playing them pieces of debates and whatnot, and watching the trend line on a computer go up and down, I mean, it was astonishing to watch what was happening as these people, mouth negativities toward each other, and so that of the, it doesn't surprise any of us, I don't think, that they're in the 60th percentile of most unlikable candidates that we've ever managed to produce. It's just that they're better known than anybody is. Hillary was a given. Donald had better name recognition than anybody who's ever run.
Why do you think the Bush fatigue was so much that Jeb just fell off the map?
He was a bad politician. Go ahead, George.
Just that, you know, Trump nailed it. Trump has a special skill with insults that only Don Rickles has ever matched.
Rickles got away with it.
Sticking the tag low energy on Jeb, everybody could see what he meant.
Yeah.
And
well, he was right.
This gets to a real problem that I alluded to earlier that touches on your caller's question of how did we end up with these two, and it's the role of big money. Hillary, through the Clinton Foundation, built up a war chest that meant that she could really stack the whole table before the game even began, particularly by funding superdelegates all over the place, so Bernie never had a chance going in. Jeb Bush had the war chest of $200 million, Paul alluded to, that scared away other candidates that might well have thought of running, including Mitt Romney. You behind the scenes, you've got George Soros, and more is coming out on WikiLeaks in the last 24 hours about how he rigged things, and you have the Koch brothers on the other side. The idea that the American people have some great choice here, at the final meal that's served before them, they have two really unappealing choices, but the American people had no say on what those choices were from the beginning. It was money determined.
You know, and most Americans, George and Paul, just want to be left alone. You know, using that little clip I use a lot from the movie Network, where Howard Beale, Peter Finch, comes out and just says, leave us alone. You know, let us have our telly and our toaster and our radial tires. Please leave us alone. I think most people are that way. They just say, you know what, just let us live our own little life and have our two cars and our house and be happy.
But the, George says that other, perhaps now 52%, want some of what you have. They're not content to leave you alone, and there will always be politicians that will promise them, oh, yes, we'll go take that from George Norrie and give it to you. And that's the stage that we're at now. I completely agree that many traditional Americans just want not to be hassled, not to be buried in taxes, and just to quietly live their lives. I don't think we have that choice anymore.
We have John in Dana Point, California, on the wild card line. John, go ahead.
Hi, George and Paul. I just hope on January 20th, whoever gets in, they'll be playing Hail to the Chief instead of Hail to the Thief.
Now, that'll be hard to do considering who our choices are.
I know. Now, 9/11, Bush was in office. Bush the Younger was in office 9 months. And the pilots from Saudi Arabia, they were in training here in the U.S. This whole thing was set up under Bill Clinton. And Bush went along with it.
When you say set up, what do you mean by set up?
Well, you know, it took a while to...
You mean literally set up?
Yeah, literally set up, as far as getting...
I don't believe that for a second. I don't think George does either.
No.
Really?
Under their watch? Yeah, no doubt. Did they have reports that people were flying planes and training? Yes. And they did nothing about it.
That's right. But don't you think that it was set up under Clinton rather than Bush? And did Bush...
What would have been the advantage of setting it up?
Well,
in other words, who benefited from that?
Well, you're saying it was an inside job.
Yeah, an inside job from Clinton's administration. And Bush just went along with it, as did President Obama, and now we have a chance to take it another step further with another Clinton.
So you can take conspiracies a little too far. And,
yes.
I mean, there are, and I've always believed that there might have been some people in government, no names mentioned, who may have picked up on things, who may have heard things, and figured, oh, this would be a great way to start other wars and stuff. But they didn't plan it. They weren't that scummy to do stuff like that. These terrorists.
You know, the other thing, George, is if you look at the Bush administration, the 8 years of George W., they never got anything else right. How could they possibly have pulled off 9/11 and all the secrecy and all the people that would have had to been involved and keep it a secret. They couldn't keep anything a secret, and they couldn't get anything right. We were going to go into Iraq. We're going to find weapons of mass destruction. They didn't find a thing. Okay. That was the gang that couldn't shoot straight, if there ever was.
Right. What was the tragedy of 9/11 convenient to do these other things? Yes, there's no question about it. But they used a horrible situation to manipulate their own agenda, and we're still in that quagmire.
I agree completely. Yeah.
Jerry in Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Jerry. Your turn on Coast
hey,
to Coast.
Man, I just want to say April the 12th. That's like my birthday, so I know that date that Hillary announced her candidacy.
Uh-huh.
Well, in 1945, the 32nd president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, died here in Georgia at Warm Springs. He had a stroke, and a few minutes later he was dead. And then the 33rd president, Harry Truman, was sworn in. Well, on the same date, Bill Clinton was first cited for lying internationally about Monica Lewinsky, okay? And then the Union troops first occupied Fort Pulaski off the coast of Savannah, and then Yuri Gagarin was the first astronaut to orbit the Earth. I think she picked that date for, you know, like, to give herself good luck, because so many things
maybe
happening.
Maybe. Well, you know, we had the numerologist, Glynis McCanson, who said that dates are picked specifically for certain reasons, and you might be right. She may have picked that date because it was a powerful date for her. That stuff happens.
She didn't talk to us.
No. But, see, you would have time-tracked that for her, right?
If she had called and said, pick me a date to announce the launch of my candidacy, we couldn't have probably picked a better date than that.
That's true. That's true. But
she didn't.
She didn't do that. I mean, do you get those kind of clients, though?
Yes.
Some who do not want to be known, I guess, right?
Yes, but you know what's really funny? We found ourselves hooked into this story in so many different ways. For instance, Karen McDougal, the Playmate of the Year 1998, who now we find out had a 10 or 12 month affair with Donald Trump after he married Melania, is a client
of yours.
Yes, and actually gave a bunch of time tracks and personal stuff to Hefner about for his 80th birthday.
Oh, geez, that's interesting. Okay, guys, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast and take final phone calls as we talk about Merlin, the Merlin Project, and its time tracks, and we'll get your calls when we come back. Okay, we're back with Paul Gersio and George Hart and your final questions. Paul, once again, tell us how you can get the app, how you can find it in your store.
All you have to do is you have to have a smartphone. If you don't have a smartphone from Apple or from Google, you're out of luck. But if you have a smartphone, there is a app access right on the phone. On Apple, it says App Store. On Google, it says Google Play.
That's
you tap
right.
that. It takes you to the App Store for the various units that you have. You type in the word TIMETRAKS. TIMETRAKS, you will get us. It will say Time Tracks by George Hart, and it's a minimal fee. It's 99 cents for the first week to try it out. That's the easiest way to get it. To get all other information about us, if you simply go to Google and type in TIMETRAKS, that's it, lowercase, no other letters, Time Tracks, you will get a whole bunch of sites and information about us, and information about the app, information about our Facebook page and the background there. You'll get the phone number to call us and the email address. All of it's there if you simply write Time Tracks at Google, and you'll get all the background.
Paul, are you or George available for a pop-in tomorrow as we get results during the election?
I am. I George?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, just to get some reaction to whatever's happening. Let's go to Bill in New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, hi. Good evening. How are you?
Great, Bill. Thanks.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Like I was saying, I honestly believe at this point in day in my life, I can recall. I go back as far as watching the Nixon debates back then, but that's when I first got a taste for politics. But to watch what's going on now, it's I'm waiting for a clown car to pull up and four or five more to hop out of the back.
Yeah, with their horns and everything else.
Exactly. I really do believe that what's going to happen now is once this go ahead and does get settled, and you stop and think about it for a minute, you're going to have to say, did I do the right thing, or did I go ahead and just vote for the lesser of the two evils?
A lot of people are saying that. You are not alone with that. A lot of people, Paul and George, are already looking ahead for the next 4 years, saying we can't wait until 4 years from now. That's not good.
George?
Well, we've talked about this on your show for almost, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, George, where there is this 72-year cycle in American politics, which told us that around the time of Barack Obama's election to president, there's going to be a final centralization of power in Washington. And this election right now is either going to ratify that or bring power back to the people. It's just the final move in the chess game. We may see stresses on the system here that take us apart. My own personal feeling is that other players, things like hackers around the world, and we've done a lot of time tracks on that problem, may become so important, along with extra governmental entities like Al-Qaeda or ISIS, that whoever is president becomes somewhat irrelevant.
That's right.
Not the office it was in 1950. Julian Assange, WikiLeaks have essentially taken apart much of Hillary Clinton's campaign and given us a glimpse into the dirty inside of politics, unlike anything we've ever seen before. I think it's not only the two candidates that discuss this, it's the whole damn show. And that's part of the thing that Trump really hit with his magical phrase, drain the swamp. Washington, D.C., once upon a time, was a swamp full of mosquitoes. Now it's just a swamp full of rats and bats, and they may not make a difference anymore. They've become a living joke as hackers in the middle of the night take apart our whole system.
Do you think this country, George, just runs itself?
No longer. We got a taste of that on October 21st, a week after the United States declared informal hacking or cyber war on Russia, when we had the distributed denial of service attack, using of all things webcams to take down key sites in the United States.
Yep.
10 or 15 years ago, before we became so dependent on the internet and e-commerce, I'd fully agree that yes, the country can run itself. I was in Washington during the Watergate era. I actually waved at Richard Nixon as he took his last flight away from the White House as he went by the Naval Research Lab, and you could see him about 100 feet away. At that point, it would run itself. Now we are so dependent on the internet and so vulnerable to large and small hackers that we have to exist in a constant state of vigilance and warfare. We are now in a medium warm cyber war with both major states like Russia and China and North Korea, but also individual 400-pound creatures living in their basements that just decide to have fun on a Saturday night. That's the world we're in. It does not run itself anymore.
We are going to the international line. Francine is in Canada. Hi, Francine.
Hi.
Hi there.
I tried to reach you for a while, but I'm 3 hours ahead of you, I believe.
I'm in L.A., and it's 11:45.
Yes, 3 hours ahead of you.
Yes, you are.
And I tried calling a few phone lines, and I don't normally call your show, George Norrie, but I've heard a lot about you. Anyway, I'm a French-Canadian woman, and I think a lot of Americans don't think that Canadians don't pay attention to what's going on in the States.
Well, you know more about the U.S. than Americans know about Canada. I'll tell you that.
That's correct. That's correct. And my husband's actually Ukrainian. So I'm paying attention to a lot what's going on. And, you know, I'm a French-Canadian woman. But you know what? I don't want Hillary winning. I want Donald Trump winning. And I have a lot of Canadian friends here, et cetera. We're looking at everything. And, you know, maybe a lot of Americans, I have a lot of American friends, and we're paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, it would be nicer, like, there's a lot of things going on with Hillary Clinton, and there's a lot of things going on with Donald Trump. You know, yes, he's sexist, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the man says it as it is. And there's a problem with immigration, et cetera. And I'm not a racist. I'm not a bigot. I'm not biased. My husband is from another country. And I think that's a major issue that you've got going on in the United States.
Oh, it's huge. It's a huge problem, Francine. And that's one of many huge issues that we have in this country. So, Paul and George, will you run Merlin right up to the last moment tomorrow, or is that it for this campaign?
George, you want to take that?
Well, we're looking at some of the senatorial races, like the extremely interesting one in New Hampshire between Hassan and Ayotte. Time Tracks might pick Hassan, but that's an awfully close race. Our really major concern right now is this hacking situation.
Right.
It's not going to end with this campaign. The date that the United States declared this informal cyber war in Russia, October 14th, 2016, is hellish in terms of the activity that predicts for the next few years. Listeners can see that out on the link that Coast to Coast has provided. It's number one up in the upper left-hand corner of the time track there. And it looks so bad that it's not impossible to imagine a scenario where the cyber war becomes so bad so quickly that it escalates to an actual shooting war. So it's really captured our attention.
It's also the anniversary date of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Back in 1962, if I remember.
That's right. Yep.
And if you do run that time tracks, it would say that this was a very dangerous time for the United States and Russia. If you also run the time track on the initial atom bomb test in New Mexico, it has a lot of activity going on right now. So as bad as this election is to deal with, we've really got to keep our eyes focused on other things and understand why a lot of the world is horrified with how casually Hillary Clinton throws around phrases like no-fly zones, like mm-hmm. we're really going to go head-to-head with Russia and start shooting down some of their planes.
No. Not going to happen. Let's hope not. Not going to happen at all. I'm concerned about some threats that ISIS has made about trying to disrupt the election tomorrow. That's a real threat. Three major cities have been warned about possibilities there, three major states. So, you know, we're not out of the woods yet, Paul and George. Anything could happen.
Well, we told you, you asked us, actually, about maybe a little more than 2 years ago, a question you had asked before, and that is, do you see any more 9/11s? And we said, well, up until the current period of time, we haven't. But right around the corner, things are about to change, and we might very well be in for something like that. And that was about 6 months before the word ISIL or ISIS was concocted, and that's when that all began. It was in the summer of, I think, 2013 or 2014 that actually started. George, who's been looking out for something like this for a while, suggested that was where this domestic terrorism and terrorism on a large scale was about to start repeating itself. And we've been watching it going on in Europe now for the better part of the last 18 months.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's been horrible there. All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Jeff in Juneau, Alaska. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I think that you guys might want to run my time track. I was born November 8th, 1960, which was also a Tuesday. And if you'll remember, it's the Tuesday that elected John F. Kennedy.
That's right.
Same election.
You were born on that.
Kind of weird. It's a second Tuesday. When it falls on the first Tuesday of November, it always goes to the second Tuesday. It's my understanding. And there's only been a couple of them in between. And the last one before, John F. Kennedy was elected the 35th president of the United States. He was 35 years old. Those numbers all come out to the number 8. So I mean, Glennis would have a field day with my birthday.
But 40, I think he was 42.
42. He was 42 when he was elected.
No, he's 35.
No, he's 42.
Not true.
Elected?
Really?
Elected?
Well, that's what Wikipedia said, anyway.
Well, Wikipedia is often wrong. It was definitely. He was definitely not 35.
You had to be 35 to run. But he was born in 1917, and he got elected in 1960, right?
Yeah.
So that would make it 42, 43 years old. He was 42 at the time. His birthday was in May. We never miss our facts.
That you enter Scorpio, and that's the 8th house anyway, so it all equals 8.
But we'll do that. Maybe the boys will run your numbers later, and because that was an interesting moment in history. A long time ago. Next up, let's go to Emily in Pennsylvania. Hi, Emily. Let's get you in here.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
It's almost 3 o'clock here, and I stay up every night.
Good for you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I've just been listening for a year. I actually never knew who you were, and now I think you're really phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
I just want to address what one of the fellows said about 20 minutes ago about talking with enemies. I just finished a really great book. It's about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who knew Neville Chamberlain at the time,
yeah.
And they would have these meetings with the bishops in England, and about 7 of these bishops said with Neville Chamberlain, we have to go and talk to Hitler, that he's really not that bad of a guy, and I think it'll work.
Well, I don't think we were suggesting that talking to them may it was also in the same category as accepting them. You can be down on some guy because of his politics or his positions and still talk to him.
Yes, and maybe one could be persuaded. The point is, if it were really an evil person, and I feel personally that in 10, 15, 20 years, we're opening our doors to having someone who's excellent. I mean, I've lived in Eastern Germany, and there's no one worse than Hitler.
No, you got that right.
There's a bunch of them.
You got that right.
The point is, these people thought that, if you could just talk to him, he would come around and
naive. They were very naive.
So they don't go out. Well, that's what I'm saying. And I think a lot of the planet is naive. I think the U.S. is very naive. They don't read their history, and they don't see how these things can slip in these situations that can get rid of a whole planet.
No, you're right. You got a lot of right points here, Paul.
I was just going to mention, George, that it's helpful if you're having that kind of conversation to have a person who wrote a book, The Art of the Deal. And one of the tragedies of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and Barack Obama as president is that they were pretty feckless in terms of not understanding how you strike a deal, what you can give up because it's not important, and the things that you really want to hang on to, knowing your priorities walking in, knowing the other person. And actually, if you're dealing with Putin or people like the President of Chechnya, physical strength and a certain energy helps a lot also.
I think so, too. Paul, as we wrap things up, personal feelings based on time tracks?
Well,
give us your thoughts.
I think I am falling in with a whole lot of friends of mine and other people. This election year has made us ill, literally.
It's made a lot of people ill.
And I think psychiatrists and psychologists are you know, can't answer enough phone calls. And I don't see that ending. I see that continuing because I don't think that this election is going to be accepted. I think there's going to be a percentage of people, maybe not 35% or 40% of the Trump voters or Hillary voters, as the case may be, who are going to be causing that. But it doesn't take 30% or 40%. All it takes is 5 or 10.
That's right. Too much hate out there. And what about the possibilities of civil unrest if they're candidate?
Probably. George has been talking about that for years on your show and elsewhere. And when he first started talking about it, I kind of dismissed it and said, nah, that's just a little over the top.
You can't.
Now I'm not so sure.
You got it. Okay, you two. We'll have you both check in real quick tomorrow just to get your reaction to whatever the results may be. And again, we'll be live for you for 5 hours. A lot of people have emailed me saying, are you starting early or later? We're going to start at our normal start time and carry it an extra hour.